Welcome to Mom's Going Boldly, a Star Trek podcast.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Mom's Going Boldly is two moms who love Star Trek and who happen to have children on the autism spectrum. Join me, Elizabeth, and my co-host Vicky as each week we talk about Star Trek episodes, both new and old. Are you ready for the adventure? Come join us on Mom's Going Boldly.
Hi, before we get started, we'd like to apologize ahead of time for the audio you're about to hear. We couldn't get our act together this week. It was me that couldn't get our act together. And we tried something new without testing it first. The audio after the commercial is a little less echoey, but I'm not saying it's good. So I hope you can muddle through, and we hope to do better next week. We're also posting this a couple days late because, once again, I couldn't get my act together. So hopefully by next week, we'll be back on schedule with episode 2. So we'll see you then, and thanks for sticking with us.
Welcome back to Moms Going Boldly. Today we're talking about Star Trek Discovery, Season 5, Episode 1, after a very, very long time of not getting any Star Trek. How are you doing today?
Good, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And what did you think of this episode, Red Directive?
You know, I really, really like the story and the mission. All the interpersonal relationship dialogue was really awkward. It was really awkward. It was like these people didn't know each other at all. And I understand that Burnham and Book are supposed to be awkward, but everybody was awkward. Even the little jokes that they always throw in during the middle of a mission, they weren't funny. Like, I have a trombone lesson later. It wasn't funny. It was just awkward.
I said to myself, why does this all feel so forced? And he said, because it's forced.
It is, yes. And I know some of it was exposition, but it doesn't need to be that awkward. And the only people I thought weren't were Saru and the Vulcan woman that I can't remember her name.
Serena.
Yes. And when Tilly was with Admiral Vance.
I agree. I thought Saru and Serena were the highlight of the episode. You know, usually Tilly is sort of what grounds us. She'd be every person, every man, every person that we can relate to in the episode. Frequently, that's the role she plays. And yeah, you're right. She didn't quite have that this time until she was with Admiral Vance. But I think it was also Admiral Vance. I think the actor that plays Admiral Vance, whose name is escaping me right now, is really good. He's a very good actor.
Yes.
He knows how to play this role.
Right. An argument could be made that they're all good actors.
Theoretically, is it the writing?
I don't know. I was going to ask, do they have a new writer?
I don't know. I haven't looked. But let's dig into the episode with a little bit more detail here and see what we think. Now, one of the things that I thought was a little off-putting was at the very beginning, we open up this episode with Burnham essentially riding a starship at warp, which I didn't even think was possible. And she's trying to do something to get into the ship. It's unclear to me. She's talking about the warp bubble. She's trying to get into this ship. And it doesn't really make sense, you know. And it's like almost a little cavalier the way she's doing this.
Exactly. And that was the trombone lesson comment. That's where that came from.
Yeah. And then we do a flashback. This is not what she expected when the night started. And then we do a flashback, which I thought, oh my gosh. Because that was where we got the exposition info dump about what's going on since the last time we saw these people.
Right.
And I thought, you know, it didn't work for me. It meant that the pacing was strange.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would have much preferred if we started at the gathering.
Yes.
And got the info dump and then did the ramping up into the action.
Yep.
It would have made more sense. I think the only reason to do it that way was to make sure they hooked the viewer with action. But I didn't think that was necessary.
No.
If we're coming back after 5 seasons, we're already invested.
Right.
We don't need to be hooked with action. So anyway, so that's where we find out what's going on. And again, this goes back to what you started off talking about at the very beginning, about how forced everything felt.
Yes.
So we get the first sort of forcedness that we get is the action, forced action. And then we get this forced feeling that Paul Stamets doesn't have a job anymore, and he doesn't know what his purpose is in this new reality where they're dumping the spore drive. So then we've got that sort of forced feeling of framework.
Right, but he does have a job. He has the job he had on Discovery. He's not going to be the famous scientist that, you know, even later when they talk about Soon's legacy, he makes this face like he has to have a legacy. Well, no, but everybody doesn't have to have a legacy. You have a job on a starship. You created a spore drive.
So anyway, it just all felt like, okay, they're setting us up so Stannis will have a new job.
Right.
They're going ahead and do something else. And it just, that felt worse. And then I felt like this whole celebrate the millennium of the Federation thing felt like it was too forced. It was just sort of like, I think part of the problem is that they're not trusting us as the viewers to keep up.
Right.
So they're like making sure we really understand. So, and then we get the Stannis regrets mentioning Book.
Right.
So that tells us there's still angst between Book and Vernon. So I guess we didn't need to know that either.
Right.
And then we get to see Saru and Tarina, and that was lovely.
Yes, it was. It was.
That felt organic. That felt like a natural conversation. He's been offered a new job. He's trying to figure out whether to take it. She, in a very Vulcan way, says, don't consider our relationship because that will keep it in the realm of logic rather than emotion, which is what you would expect her to say. It felt very natural.
Yeah.
And he's looking a little perplexed because that's not how his mind works. But he listens to the woman that he loves, so he's sort of giving that some credence. He's thinking it over.
Right.
So that was helpful. And then we get into this weird, Vernon's pulled out by the Admiral to have a conversation with Kovich about something secret.
Right.
And they have to go into the Infinity Room.
Yeah, well, at least it wasn't the Cone of Silence this time.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It was so get smart Cone of Silence kind of thing. Yep. I agree. That was exactly what I thought, too.
We're going to pause right here for a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey, Doug Gramley here from Yeah, That Can't Be Good.
Doug here from the 13th Warehouse. If you are a fan of Eureka,
please join Kim, Vicky, Skip, and myself over at Yeah, That Can't Be Good for an episode-by-episode podcast of all things Eureka at EurekaRewatch.com. If you're a fan of Warehouse 13,
please join Kim and Vicky over at the 13th Warehouse at the13thwarehouse.com. You can also listen
on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Visit us on Twitter at Eureka Warehouse.
And we're back.
Okay, so they're in the Cone of Silence Infinity Room. I'm going to call it that from now on because I think it's funny. And he tells them about there's a new mission. They got to drop everything, and they have to go get this 800-year-old science vessel. And that's when I just sort of was like, oh, crap. They have gone 900 years into the future where they still have Jemja sticks.
Yes.
And now they're going to go find an 800-year-old science vessel because that goes back to the time of where they came from or the time that we're familiar with from previous episodes of Star Trek.
Right.
And I was just sort of kind of winced because that meant that they were not going to be doing something creative that came from the time frame they were in. They were going to go back to the old tried and true familiar stuff from previous episodes of Star Trek. To me, that feels like a little bit of a cheat.
Yeah, I think that's purposeful, you know, because of all the complaints about how this isn't related to any of the Star Treks because it's in the future, which it shouldn't be because it's in the future.
I agree with that. I don't think it should be. I think these guys made the decision to take us 900 years in the future. We just need to lean into it and stay 900 years.
Right.
And then retreat and go, okay, well, we'll grab something that people are familiar with that they remember with fondness. And then Kovich says this is a red directive. Mm-hmm. And we never once in this entire episode get an explanation of what red directive is.
I actually looked it up because I couldn't remember if I ever heard that before. I didn't think I did. In my head, I had that Voyager episode with the...
The Omega directive?
Yeah, so that was in my head. But I guess a red directive is do what you have to do no matter who you have to kill to do it. So, you know, the way Kovich is acting, that's exactly what a red directive is in the description that I read. Like, if they had to kill 1,000 people, then they did. Which doesn't seem very Starfleet.
It doesn't seem very Starfleet. And that was another element what seemed very forced. So we had a couple of those things. We got this red directive, and I did not do that research. So we're going to go ahead and go with what you discovered, which is red directive is this mission is so important, it doesn't matter who dies.
Right.
And we see that throughout the episode. Kovich says, you know,
these mercenaries have gotten on board the ship. They're going to grab the thing that he can't tell them what it is, that they're supposed to be retrieving from this 800-year-old Romulan ship. And they're going to go, supposed to go in with their phaser set to kill. So we get this, again, very forced feeling set up of Burnham and her old-fashioned Starfleet values in conflict with the Red Directive values of just doesn't matter who dies, we need this.
Right.
And so we get that with the scavengers. She goes in. He says, go in with your phasers on kill. She says to her team, phasers on stun. We've got the captain of the Antares, who is like, I don't care if we blow up the ship while I have in the tractor beam, which made no sense at all.
Right.
The whole thing made no sense at all. Anyway, I don't care if we blow up the ship, but she's like, release the tractor beam, are you going to kill these people? And then they get away. So she's in the wrong because she had the values, and he's in the right because they got away, and he knew they were going to get away, but he was willing to kill them. And then they go to the village, as you mentioned, where the people have set a trap that, you know, as they're trying to get away, they have an explosive device which will cause an avalanche to destroy the village. And she's like, we have to use the ships to stop the avalanche, which, by the way, was a very cool scene.
It was.
CG-wise, you know, graphics-wise, having these two starships come down and sort of bury their noses into the sand and then erect their force fields to stop the avalanche from floating over the village was really cool. It was a shame that they didn't take some of that CG on this desert planet and block out the green grass so we could see behind the village that was erected on the sand. Because that was really like, there's like a whole lawn back there, somebody's lawn, and they just didn't like throw some sand on that with their CG to make this look like a desert planet. And so, you know, and we see that over and over and over again, that we've got this conflict, and they set it up so pointedly, it, again, doesn't feel organic. And so what you can see coming is that she's eventually going to convince Captain Antares, whose name I can't remember, that her values are superior, and he's going to start adopting these values.
In true Star Trek fashion, but that's not what happens.
Right, yeah. Right. But here's the thing that really kind of stood out for me as far as this, you know, Burnham's got this whole values thing going, right, the whole time. And then when she figures out what planet is being referred to in the diary, which was found by the Data clone. I think they're going to bring Fred back to life, by the way. The Data clone that they discovered, it was an old stuff that the scavengers wanted to sell the diary to that they found on the Romulan ship. But then he was like, no, I'm just going to keep this. And so then they shot him. I think Stamets is going to become a new...
Soon. Yeah.
Soon, right?
Yeah.
And he's going to, like, resurrect Fred. And then we're going to have a Data-esque character. Once again, drawing us back to the old stuff and not leaning into the new stuff, but whatever. So she finds this moon. This planet with twin moons. She recognizes it. And then she uses it to blackmail Kovich to tell her what this is all about before she gives him that information that theoretically as a Starfleet officer under a Red Directive she should be doing anyway because she's ordered to.
Exactly. It was a bizarre episode, yeah.
It was just like, that was so not values-based. I need this information to do my job, so I'm going to withhold this information that I have from you until you tell me. Wow.
I know.
Anyway, but let's talk about the stuff we did like. I really liked, like you did, the interaction with Tilly and Vance. This has not been read into this either, so he's kind of like irritated, so he's willing to bend the rules a little bit too.
Right.
In order to get the information that he needs to do his job. Which is kind of interesting because Kovich is supposed to be like this expert psychological evaluator. Remember how great he was?
Yes.
With the Empress? He knew what she was thinking, he knew what was going on with her.
Yeah.
How could he not be aware that Burnham and Vance are not going to be used to their most effectiveness without their knowing what's going on?
Exactly.
It didn't make any sense based on his previous behavior.
No, it doesn't.
So the other thing I really like you, is I thought the scenes on the planets were actually very well done. They were very immersive in giving us a good feel for a different culture and an environment that did seem very organic and natural.
Yes.
So I liked that. And then the avalanche, I thought that made a lot of sense, though once again Burnham's failed to complete her mission.
Yeah.
And then after failing to complete her mission and having these scavengers run away with this diary and getting the two starships to plow into the sand and stop the avalanche. She sits there and has a heart-to-heart with Book.
With Book. You know, I told you last season, I'm over those two. I don't care if they get back together. I have no investment in this relationship anymore.
I'm thinking, you know, these people are getting away.
Exactly.
And you're just sitting there talking about your feelings.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. I like the scene where they stopped the avalanche. I thought that was really cool.
It was.
Very well done.
It was, yes.
I love the scene where Saru goes back to Tarina. This is probably the best scene in the whole episode. He goes back to Tarina and explains that he was saving these people's lives on this planet, and there was some danger to the ship, and he was just thinking if he had been on the planet, this was happening, and there was nothing he could do. All he could think of was her. And he said, I can't make my decision as to whether to become an ambassador and resign my Starfleet commission or stay with Starfleet without thinking about you.
Right.
And then said, and I decided to accept the ambassadorship. And then she proposes, and it was so cute.
It was.
So that was awesome. That was awesome. Those were my favorite parts. And I can see where they're trying actually to get Chili a little bit of a romance there, too. There's some guy who's followed her into her room that seemed to be interested in her, but she was a little overwhelmed by it. So
right.
That was kind of cute, too.
Yeah, it didn't strike me as, like I said, the only part that Tilly struck me as Tilly is when she was with Vance. Even the awkwardness with the guy didn't seem to be the Tilly that, I don't know. I can't describe what I'm thinking. It wasn't cute like it would have been normally.
Yeah.
For me, anyway.
Yeah. Any other thoughts about this episode that I haven't already raised that you were considering and wanting to talk about?
So, no, I didn't even write any notes. Like I said, I like the story. I like the action part of it. Which usually isn't me. Usually you like the action and I like the rest of it. But I did like all the action parts of it. And I did like when they were concentrating on the mission. But everything else just seemed really awkward to me. And I don't know if it's because we haven't seen this in so long. Maybe we're just not used to this. Because we were watching Strange New Worlds for two seasons. But it just seemed like these people didn't know each other at all. And they were forcing all these little jokes that used to be funny.
Something missed.
Seemed very forced.
We need to pull it together. We've got 9 more episodes this season until this series.
But is it over? Is it over on the 10th season episode? Because remember, they finished the season. This is before they knew they were canceled. Usually their seasons are 10 episodes.
Well, and that's what we've got here is 10 episodes.
But they had finished the 5th season, thinking they were going to come back for a 6th. Then they found out they were canceled, so they had to come back and shoot more episodes.
Okay.
Do you think 10 is the end, or do you think 10 is the mid-season break?
I don't know. That's a great question. The last episode is called Life Itself.
I know.
Does that sound like a final?
It does.
Maybe they turned that into like a 2-hour finale kind of thing.
I don't know.
I don't either. But we're going to find out, aren't we?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other thoughts on Red Directive?
Nope. I'm good.
Okay. Well, then we invite our listeners to join us next time as we talk about Star Trek Discovery Season 5, Episode 2, Under the Twin Moons.
You can continue exploring the universe with Moms Going Boldly by following us on Facebook at facebook.com/momsgoingboldly and on Twitter at momsgoingboldly. The music used on Moms Going Boldly is Without Limits by Ross Bugden Music. On Twitter, at Ross Bugden. Licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License, creativecommons.org.
You can listen to Moms Going Boldly on Podbean, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Player FM. And we're now also available on Apple Podcasts.
Transfer complete.